Chapter 12, continued Panchanga Bhakti. We're discussing associating with advanced devotees. Rupa Goswami gives two qualifying terms here, sajati asnigda. So sajati means same family or same disposition. These are the symptoms of those devotees whom we should associate with. Sajati also means they're in the same sampradaya. In other words, many times people go to hear Bhagavad Saptahas, but they may be given by Mayavadis or Rambhaktas or Ramanandis. But actually their Siddhanta, their conclusion is slightly different, of course, than Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. So we should prefer and choose only to associate and hear from Gaudiya Vaishnavas, especially those that are in the same sthayibhav that we are aspiring for. For example, the Rasika Vaishnava who is in Sakyaras, he will speak with that kind of mood. Srupa Goswami, or rather Jiva Goswami in his commentary, explains that sajati means that we should associate with devotees who worship the same particular form of the Lord that we do. In other words, they worship Radha and Krishna as their ishta. And they possess the same internal spiritual mood as oneself. This means a sthayibhav. So sadhakas in the mood of dasyabhav should associate with devotees in dasyabhav. And sadhakas in the mood of madhuryabhav should associate with devotees in madhuryabhav. And sadhakas who worship other incarnations of the Lord should associate with devotees. In other words, birds of a feather flock together. Rambhaktas associate with Rambhaktas. Krishna Bhaktas associate with Krishna Bhaktas, especially Gaurav Bhaktas, Gorgadadhar Bhaktas. We're Gorgadadhar, Gorgovinda Bhaktas, devotees of Gauranga and Radha Govinda. Oftentimes, devotees go and take association with sadhus that may be in Nimbarki line, Bhavajis or great devotees, and that may be all right to some extent, but really Rupa Goswami is not recommending that. That we should always associate with those, because, for example, the mantra that they chant and the bhava behind that mantra that they chant the Radhe Sham, Radhe Sham, Sham Sham Radhe, Radhe, Radhe Krishna, Radhe Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Radhe Radhe. So this is the mantra they'll chant when you associate with them, the kirtan they will perform, aside from other bhajans, Brajbhas bhajans or Brajbhasi bhajans. And behind that chanting is their mood. And their mood is Sakhi Bhav or Nayaka Bhav. And our Maha Mantra is Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And our mood is Mandri Bhav or Bhavalasarati. The mood of the is not exactly Nayaka Bhav or Sakhi Bhav, but is Mandri Bhav. Coming Rupa Raghunath, Bhade Havayakuti, Segula Yugala Puriti. The Yuga Puriti, we want the divine service of Radharani, especially Radhadasyam in the mood of a Mandari. So our mantra is different, and our bhav behind the mantra is different. And our prayojana is different, and our sadhanas are slightly different. So it's not so much recommended to associate with those that are not Gaudiya Vaishnavas. In fact, Rupa Goswami says that one should not. The second qualification of the sadhu is that he should be snigda. So sneha means, refers to those who are affectionate, snehaka, well-wishing and rasika, not those that are harsh, unsympathetic, and indifferent. So the actual esoteric mysteries of bhajan and genuine instruction regarding the method of performing bhajan cannot be obtained from sadhus who are indifferently disposed or are not affectionate to us. So the conclusion is, according to Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravartipad, and Rupa Goswami is telling here, is sajati asnigda mahattara sarusanga. Association with like-minded, affectionate, advanced devotees is the 62nd principle of devotion. And the third of the Panchanga Bhakti. So therefore, to associate with saintly devotees who are soft-hearted and affectionate is of the greatest help for our bhajan. So even So now we have to say we may find a devotee who is sajati and snigda, but he should also be more advanced in terms of nishta, nishtita bhakti, or nishta and bhajan. He should be more advanced in his steadiness in bhajan, his direct experience of Radha and Krishna, and his realization of the Lord, and also in knowing the confidential mysteries of the Shastras. In other words, when we seek association, we should try to find devotees who are superior to ourselves in all respects. It doesn't mean older in age, or that he's a sannyasi, or he's a brahmachari, or anything of this nature, but he actually should have these characteristics of nishta and bhajan, and he should have direct experience and realization of the Lord, and actually understand the mysteries of the Shastras. By associating with these type of devotees that possess all these characteristics and qualities, that the devotee or sadhakan can make steady and gradual advancement on the path of prema bhakti. The fourth of the Panchanga Bhakti is mentioned on page 106 of Nectar Devotion. Chanting the name of the Lord. It's a doubtless and fearless way to success in all our endeavors. This verse is quoted here from the second canto, first chapter, verse 11. If one is spontaneously attached to chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, he has attained the highest perfectional stage. This practice of loud congregational chanting of the holy name is called Nam Sankirtan. There are several verses that Rupa Goswami quotes as Praman in his discussion here on page 106 107 of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Pramadi Paran, Padma Paran. He quotes Namajintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Nitya Mukta Purna Shudo Vinatvan Namanamano. Atak Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet. Nabhavet Graimindriya Sevan Mukhehi Jivado Swayam Eva Spurat Yada. And he also quotes this verse about the power of the holy name from Padma Puran. Vishnur Ekaikam Nama Api Sarva Vedadikam Matam Tadrik Nama Sahasraena Urama Nama Samam Smitam. This glorifies the name of Krishna by saying that each and every name of Lord Vishnu is more beneficial than reciting all the Vedas, Sarva Vedadikam Matam. Nevertheless, Nama Sahasrena, 1,000 names of Vishnu taken together are only equal to just one name of Ram. So Ram's name is so powerful. And then Brahmanda Puran is quoted. Sahasranamnam punyanam tri ravritya tu yat phalam ikavritya tu krishnasya namaikam tat prayachati. The result that's attained, the same result that one obtains by chanting 1,000 names of Vishnu 3 times, is accomplished simply by pronouncing one name of Krishna. So, 3,000 names of Vishnu equals one name of Krishna. This is the most powerful of all mantras. It's full of ras. It's chintamani, can fulfill all one's desires. As Prabhupada explains here on page 108, as soon as one develops his spontaneous service attitude, he can immediately understand the transcendental nature of the holy names of the Maha Mantra. So that's the key to realizing Nam Rup Guna Leelam, Krishna's Divya Namam, transcendental name, is a Seva Bhavana. Seva Bhavana means transcendental attitude, service attitude. Dasosmi Ubi Bhartu Parakamaliar Das and Ardas and Ardas. Das and Ardas and Ardas and Ardas and Ardas. I am a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. This is our real identity. Jivara Swarupaya Krishnara Nityadas. That by nature, our Swarup, original form, is that we are eternal servants of Krishna. So when the Jiva engages himself in a very devotional manner in serving Krishna, then automatically Srinam will manifest itself or himself on the tongue and other senses, which are thus purified by bhakti. As this verse in Padma Puran says, Nama Chintamani, or this one says, Atak Sri Krishna Namavad, that the holy name cannot be understood by material senses. The jiva, when he becomes situated in his pure spiritual form, then he's actually eligible to chant Harinam with his full spiritual body, Jinmoya Sharir. But actually, while we're still in this material body, we can't really chant pure name. When we actually obtain the mercy of Ladini Shakti, then the activity of our own inner spiritual form begins. And at that time, the appearance of name takes place. As soon as the Nam arises, Shudanam mercifully manifests within the faculty of the mind, then dances upon the tongue of the devotee purified by bhakti. Prabhupada often said this, that Krishna, when we chant Hare Krishna, we will see Krishna dancing on our tongue. So our tongue will become like a rasa mandal for the Lord to dance over there. Vishnu's Chakravarti's commentaries, he has many discussions about the holy name, and then he cites various shastric references to explain how of the 64 angas of bhakti which we've been discussing, the Nam Sankirtan is the topmost, and one Shastra Praman is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya 4, verse 70 and 71. Vajanera Madhya Shrestha Navavira Bhakti Krishna Prema Krishna Dite Dari Mahashakti Tara Madhya Sarva Shrestha Nama Sankirtan Niraparari Namalaile Paya Prema Dan. So Bhajanera Madhya Shrestha, of all the different forms of bhajan or sadhana, the Shrestha, the best of the Navavida Bhakti, the best, the nine limbs are the best because they have great potency. Krishna Premet, Krishna Dite, Narde Mahashakti, they have great potency to bestow Krishna Prem and Sri Krishna. Out of these nine practices, Bhagavan Nam Sankirtan is the most excellent. If one performs Nam Sankirtan free from offenses, he will certainly attain the most valuable wealth of Krishna Prem. Niraparadi Nam Laile Paya Premadan. So these are nice verses. Dhanur Sankirtan must be done purely in order to attract the Lord. And the verse is quoted here also in Vishnu's commentary from 11th canto, chapter 2, verse 40, a very famous verse. Evam pratasva priyanama kirtya chitana rago druta chituche hasatyato roditi roti gayati unmaravanrityati lokabhaya. In the hearts of those who adopt such a pure vow, the sprout of prema, which is bhava, blossoms into anurag, which softens the heart and fills one with a deep sense of attachment, mamata, for Krishna. This occurs by chanting the holy name of one's most dearly beloved Lord. At such a time, one rises above the condition of the general mass of people. One becomes indifferent to public opinion and does not seek approval for his activities. By the natural disposition of his prema, the devotee sometimes bursts out into laughter just like an intoxicated person. And other times he cries bitterly or calls the name of the Lord in a loud voice beckoning him. Sometimes he sings of the Lord's qualities in a sweet and melodious voice. And sometimes, upon seeing his dearly beloved directly before his eyes, sakshat darshan, he begins to dance in a most captivating manner in order to charm Sri Krishna. So this verse is cited in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as an example of prema arising from bhava attained through Vaidhi Sadhana. So the actual understanding is by performing Shravanam and Kirtanam, Krishna's holy name, in the stages of Ruchi and Asakti, bhava will manifest within the heart. By continual performance of Harinam with deep attachment in the stage of bhava, the heart becomes melted and one becomes overwhelmed with a deep sense of possessiveness towards Krishna, mamata. Krishna is mine. This matured state of bhava then transforms into prema and then exhibits various bodily transformations or outward manifestations of prema, which are known as anubhavas. And Jiva Goswami, he explains in Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheta 273, he quotes in Sri Vaishnava Chintamani about the importance of Nam Sankirtan, explaining how Nam, chanting Nam, is superior to the process of Smaranam, which is remembrance. Agachit Smaranam Vishnur Bhavayasena Sadyate Oshcha Spandana Matrena Kirtanantu Tatovaram. Remembrance of Sri Krishna, which destroys all sins, is accomplished with great endeavor, for it is very difficult to withdraw the mind from the unlimited varieties of worldly sense objects and concentrate it upon Vishnu. But Sri Kirtan is easily accomplished simply by vibrating the lips. Therefore, Krishna Kirtan is superior to and more effective than the process of Smaranam. In the Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami explains that in other yugas, the Supreme Lord personally instructed the system of religion, dhyana, yajna, and so on. And also, in those particular ages, he practiced it himself. And in the other yugas, satya, tritya, dvapara, Krishna did not teach the process of Nam Kirtan by his personal behavior. But in Kali Yuga, Bhagavan could see the predicament of the jivas, so he personally taught the method of Nam Sankirtan by practicing it himself in the form of Sri Gauranga. Nam Prem Malaganti Paraila Samsare. This is from Adi Lila, chapter 4, verse 40. Sri Gauranga wove a garland of the holy name and prema and garland the entire material world. Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita also said that Harinam Sankirtan is the foremost of all the limbs of bhakti, including Smaran. It's in the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, chapter 3, verse 148. Vanyamahe kirtanameva sattamam lalat makaika swaradi spurat sprinte vachi soyukte manasi shruto tata devyat paranapipakurva datmat vat. Which means, the Lord's associates in Vaikuntha said, in our opinion, kirtan is superior to smaran because remembrance manifests only within the mind, which is by nature unsteady. Kirtan, on the other hand, manifests on the tongue and the vocal organs and automatically creates an impression upon the mind. In the end, the sound of kirtan not only satisfies the sense of hearing, but it pleases all those who hear it, just as it does for the self. In Smaranam, there is no such power. Therefore, a kirtan alone is capable of controlling the mind, which is more flickering than the wind. Chanchalahi mana Krishna, as Krishna says in the Gita. As Arjuna tells Krishna in the Gita, to control the mind is more difficult than the controlling of the wind. And besides that, the mind cannot perform Smaran without kirtan. By Sri Krishna Nam Sankirtan, the wealth of Krishna Prema quickly makes its appearance in the heart of a sadhaka. Sri Krishna Nam Sankirtan is competent itself to generate the wealth of prema without reliance upon any other methods. Jiva Goswami explains in Bhaktisandarbha Anuchay 273, Hata eva yajanyapi bhakti kalo kartavya tadatat samyoge naivet yuktam. In Kali Yuga, if one performs another anga of bhakti, he must accompany that with the chanting of Harinam Sankirtan. So, according to the Shastras, the glories of Harinam Kirtan are exalted hundreds of times over the process of Harinam Japa. This is because one who performs Japa purifies only oneself, whereas one performs loud Nam Sankirtan purifies himself as well as all those who hear the chanting. Prahlad Maharaj says in Naradiya Puran, Japato Harimana ni stane shata gunadika Atmanancha putat yucher japan shotrin punaticha. Chanting of Hari's holy name loudly is 100 times more powerful than chanting softly. A person who chants loudly purifies himself as well as those who hear him chanting. Sometimes people, they say, oh, why you should chant in your mind. Why are you chanting outside? It's not proper to chant mantras externally. You should chant quietly or silently in your mind. So they want to prohibit the loud chanting of the Maha Mantra. But actually Mahaprabhu, he personally practiced and propagated Bhagavan Nam Sankirtan. He declared that this mantra to be the Maha Mantra of Kali Yuga. So he personally practiced japa and recorded the number of times he chanted. And he also performed sankirtan while deeply overwhelmed in spiritual motion with his arms upraised, either alone or with his associates. Chaitanya Bhagavat explains, and also in the sacred books of Kavi Karnapur. Therefore, sadhakas can perform japa, the Maha Mantra. They can also perform kirtan by uttering the holy name in a loud voice. So the last limb here is Mathura Mandali Stiti, living in Mathura. So living in other holy places like Mathura or Dwarka gives one mukti, but living in Mathura gives bhakti to Lord Hari. Shri Radhe 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 Mathura Mandali Stiti. So Mathura, living in Mathura Vrindavan, is superior to the 6 cities that offer moksha. There are other cities, of course, in India, or other places which are very pure. They're called Muktistalis. Kashi is one, Kanchi, Haridwar, Dwarka, and Puri. But they can't compare to Sri Vrindavan Vas. So Vrindavan Dham is super excellently glorified because it's the eternal abode of the divine and charming pastimes of Swayam Bhagavan Rajendranandan Sri Krishna, who is the embodiment of Ras, Akila Rasamritas Murti, and the complete personification of majesty and sweetness. Sri Vrindavan is anointed with the sublime pastimes of Mahabhava Mayi Radhika and Rasaraj Sri Krishna. By residing in Vrindavan and performing sadhana and bhajan, sadhakas easily obtain manifestation of these transcendental pastimes within their hearts. The resolute determination to reside in Braj displayed by the most highly esteemed 6 Goswamis is without precedent. Srila Prabhupada Nanda Saraswati has a nice verse from Sri Vrindavan Mahimamrita, Shataka 1278. Sri Vrindavana Mama Pavanam Tameva. Sri Vrindavana Mama Pavanam Tameva. Sri Vrindavana Mama Jivanam Tameva. Sri Vrindavana Mama Bhushanam Tameva. Sri Vrindavana Mama Sadhyashas Tameva. O Vrindavan, you are my purifier. O my Vrindavan, you are my life. O Vrindavan, you are my ornament. O Vrindavan, you are my virtuous fame. And Srila Raghunath Das Goswami has a nice verse in Stavavali where he says with great affection, he describes his deep faith towards Braja Dham. He says, even if in some other dham, the Sri Vigraha of Sri Krishna is present, and there is opportunity to relish Harikatha with great love, flowing from the mouths of elevated devotees, I have no desire to live in such a place, even for a moment. But even if I must live in the company of vulgar persons who converse only about mundane topics, I will live in Brajabhumi life after life. So these last five limbs of bhakti, Panchanga bhakti, are the most excellent. Even slightly contacting them, one can attain bhava bhakti, as long as one doesn't make any offense. So by obtaining nishchan and performance, either one or several of these principal angas, one is sure to obtain perfection. But however, if one commits offense while practicing this panchanga bhakti, he will not attain ruchi or rati or bhav for hundreds of births. But if one is free from offenses, then even if not having deep faith, he may be a neutral person, but he will attain bhava by practicing any of these panchanga bhaktis. Bhakti. Next is chapter 13, which is called Five Potent Forms of Devotional Service, which again, the Rupa Goswami discusses again these qualities, these five principles. And Mathura, Sri Murti Seva, Mathura Mandala Stiti, Sarasangam. This is so important. Anything good is worth repeating. So he goes, repeats it again. So to list these again, it's one is residing in Mathura, Mathura Mandale Stiti. Two is worshipping the deity, Sri Murtir Angri Sevane. Three, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Bhagavat Artha Swado. Four, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, Sri Nam Sankirtanam. Five, serving a devotee, Shajatya Shaya Snigda Sri Bhagavat Bhakta Sango. So Prabhupada explains, page 109, that these practices, this Panchanga Bhakti, are so potent that a small attachment for any one of these five items can arouse devotional ecstasy, which means bhava, even in a neophyte. So, in other words, neophyte means one who has weak attachment to Krishna. He can quickly achieve bhava bhakti by practicing any one of these panchanga bhaktis. So one can see, if one examines the ISKCON society which Prabhupada established, that he based his society on these five principles. Because he wanted to give everyone around the world, especially in Vrindavan, Prabhupada built ISKCON's basic spiritual program, chanting Hare Krishna, daily Srimad Bhagavatam class, lavish deity worship, associating with devotees, and the establishment of extensive facilities in Mayapur and Vrindavan, so devotees can come and live there comfortably and peacefully and practice bhakti bhajan. So in these few pages, chapter 13, Rupa Goswami gives examples and explains how each item of this panchanga evokes bhava. The first is worshipping the deity. So he, by composing this famous verse about the deity of Govinda, says that, oh my friend, if you have any desire to enjoy the company of your friends within the material world, then don't look upon the form of Krishna standing by Keshi Ghat under the full moon rays. He's known as Govinda, and his eyes are enchanting. Playing his flute, and a peacock feather adorns his head. His whole body is illuminated by the moonlight in the sky. So it's interesting, in this metaphor, it appears that he seems to be condemning. The metaphor condemns what it seems to praise and praises what it seems to condemn. Thus it actually instructs one to see the beautiful deity of Govinda Vrindavan And by seeing Govindaji, of course the deity of Govinda, the Rupa Goswami is writing about, which is his beloved Ishtadev, has now shifted to Jayapur, but the Pratibhumurti is there also. Behind the old Radha Govinda temple is the what they call the new Radha Govinda temple, which is quite old also. The beautiful deity of Govindaji is there. So Rupa Goswami indirectly is actually telling that someone sees this beautiful deity of Govindadev, he'll become indifferent to the attractions of this material world. So this is one of the nine symptoms of Bhava Bhakti. It's called Virakti. So by seeing the deity, one becomes indifferent, and then that way develops Bhava. So especially by seeing Rupa Goswami's Govindaji deity, one can quickly evoke devotional ecstasy, Bhava, even in a neophyte. The second is Bhagavat Shravan, hearing the Bhagavatam. Now Rupa Goswami here, Prabhupada's describing. In Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he's also composing another metaphor by calling a friend foolish for having heard the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. And by doing that, he's become completely indifferent to the so-called, quote, wonderful activities of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. They become insignificant because the truly soul-pleasing and happiness obtained from the Purushartha, the fifth goal of life, is obtained by hearing Bhagavatam. So here, Rupa Goswami is denouncing even liberation, which is another characteristic of Bhava Bhakti, namely moksha lagut akrita. So Rupa Goswami, when he's mentioning the Bhagavatam, he's especially mentioning the 10th canto, because the 10th canto can quickly evoke devotional ecstasy, Bhava, even in a neophyte. Now he talks about sadhusanga, or serving a devotee. So he describes on page 110 of Nectar Devotion the rich devotional sentiments of a devotee in whose heart the Lord has appeared. It is very astonishing, since I have seen the personality of Godhead, who is washed by the tears of my eyes. They are shivering in my body, and Krishna has made me a failure in executing my material duties. Since I've seen him, I cannot remain silently at home. I wish to go out to him always. So this verse clearly illustrates the efficacy of serving a devotee. Prabhupada says here in the comment, he says, the purport of this is that if one is fortunate to contact a pure devotee, one must be anxious immediately to hear about Krishna, learn about Krishna, and become fully Krishna conscious. Quickly become enriched by devotional symptoms of devotional ecstasy, bhava, such as samutkanta, which is intense eagerness, and avyarta kalatvam, which means not wasting a moment, or in other words, executing service to Krishna without wasting a moment, which is indicated in this phrase, Nectar Devotion. Since I've seen Krishna, I cannot remain silently at home. I wish to go out to him always. So this indicates that if this happens just by seeing a devotee, one can only imagine what type of genuine ecstatic devotion one will attain simply by actually serving a devotee. Now the discussion of how chanting Hare Krishna mantra awakens bhava. So Nectar Devotion explains about Narada Muni's Veena and Narada Muni's Kirtan. It says that if one can hear the singing of Narada glorifying the Lord and vibrating his Veena, then by that kirtan of Narada, one will become bereft of all attachment for material enjoyment. So this, what is described here, Nectar Devotion, being bereft of all attachment, or in other words, becoming totally detached, complete detachment, this is a symptom of bhava, namely virakti. Srupa Goswami is showing here that devotional, that kirtan can also evoke devotional ecstasy even in a neophyte. Because by hearing the kirtan of such an advanced devotee's Narada, one becomes virakti, or detached from the material world. Residing in Mathura, then Rupa describes the beauty of Vrindavan Dham, decorated with the Yamuna, Kadamba trees, chirping birds, and beautiful form of Shamsundar. Simply by remembering the beauty of Vrindavan, one will attain bhava. And he quotes, this is the quote he gives, "I remember Krishna standing on the banks of the Yamuna, so beautiful amid the Kadamba trees with birds chirping in the gardens. And these impressions are always giving me transcendental realizations of beauty and bliss." Now in his commentary, Jiva Goswami explains that Manasi Kamapi Bhavam Kananan Shishtanoti, which means transcendental realizations of beauty and bliss. This indicates mental realization of one's eternal serving mood, or Swarup Siddhi, which occurs during the stage of Bhava Bhakti. So therefore, in this entry, Rupa Goswami is showing that simply by remembering Vrindavan, or what to speak of residing there, one can quickly evoke devotional ecstasy, bhava. Prabhupada comments, "Such transcendental feelings are aroused immediately and without fail after one arrives in Mathura or Vrindavan." So these are wonderful results Rupa Goswami is describing. His Panchanga Bhakti has the potential to evoke Bhava Bhakti when executed offensively. So Rupa Goswami explains that although some of these 64 limbs of devotion are said to reward one with various worldly benedictions, Rupa explains that this is simply a way of attracting mundane people to take up devotional service. The actual result of these 64 limbs of Bhava Bhakti, 64 limbs of Vaidhi Sadhana, which have been described, the actual result is to elevate one and promote one to the platform of Bhava Bhakti. And his discussion also in this chapter, Rupa Goswami concludes that Varnashram Dharma is not an item of Bhakti, but there's some exception here, that if a devotee is not yet fully attracted to unalloyed glorification of Krishna, he may utilize Varnashram Dharma to regulate and purify his distracting material desires. There's an example given. The marriage is certainly not one of the 64 items of bhakti. A devotee, however, may enter the Grihastha Ashram if necessary in order to avoid sinful life and stay in the progressive path. In other words, a brahmachari may feel very lusty and just understand that he cannot continue as a brahmachari, so rather than breaking the principles, he should lawfully and properly get himself married and enter the Grihastha Ashram so that he can go up steadily and progressively. So this taking of the Grihastha Ashram is not exactly a limb of bhakti, but it's actually part of the Varnashram system. If such Varnashram activities are aimed at purification for the Lord's pleasure, they can be considered a subsidiary item of devotional service. In other words, the Brahmachari is thinking that if I enter the Grihastha Ashram, at least I'll be guided by these rules and regulations, and I'll raise a family for the pleasure of Krishna, make them devotees. So in this way, I'll eventually become pure and absorb myself in pure devotional service for the pleasure of Krishna. So without being aimed at eventual purification and unalloyed surrender, however, no aspect of Varnashram can be considered an item of devotional service. So this chapter, Rupa Goswami gives an analysis of jnana and vairagya, which are favorable for achieving a footing in Krishna consciousness, may be accepted in the beginning, but ultimately they may also come to be rejected, for bhakti is not dependent on anything other than the sentiment or desire for such service. It doesn't depend on anything but sincerity. So, the cultivation of knowledge, jnana, and the cultivation of detachment, vairagya, It may preliminarily help a new devotee focus on Krishna by freeing him from distracting attraction to different sense objects. But of themselves, Jnana and Vairagya do not fix the mind directly on Krishna. Rather, the mind is absorbed in philosophical discrimination between matter and spirit. But sadhana bhakti is based on fixing the mind on Krishna. This is the most essential part. Since Jnana and Vairagya of themselves fail to do this, they are not actually items of sadhana bhakti. Rupa Goswami warns here that Jnana and Vairagya can harden the heart. A materially attached person has many emotions that impel him towards sense gratification. Vairagya involves making the heart hard and callous and indifferent to such emotions so that they will not disturb us and we will not be disturbed or moved by these emotions. We become stone-like or shanti-shanti. Bhakti, however, is an active practice, which means to please Krishna by our love for him. To express such love requires a soft heart, one easily moved by the Lord's name, form, qualities, and activities. Jnana and Vairagya are not favorable to bhakti because they result in a hard, stoic heart. Although the processes of Jnana and Vairagya are unfavorable, the qualities of Jnana and detachment are necessary for devotional advancement. Without knowledge and detachment, we will become attached to the material body and tend to act for the body and not for Krishna's pleasure. Detachment can harden the heart and make it useless for devotional service. Yet detachment is necessary for achieving the desirelessness required for pure devotional service. So then the question comes up, can one become detached without developing a hard heart? So in answering this, Rupa Goswami says that detachment and knowledge automatically come from bhakti. And then he imparts his famous Yukta Vairagya verse, Anasaktasya Vishayan Yataram Upayunjataha Nirbanda Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagya Muchate. This is quoted in Nectar Devotion and also in Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 16, chapter 238. Translation: things should be accepted for the Lord's service and not for one's sense gratification. If one accepts something without attachment and accepts it because it is related to Krishna, one's renunciation is called Yukta Vairagya. It's an entry here. When one attains ruchi or taste in the service of Lord Hari, then all his material attachments will melt away in most cases. So Prabhupada explains in his purport here that a person who's developing Krishna consciousness yet still has some attachment to material enjoyment will soon be freed from such a tendency by regularly practicing bhakti under the instruction of a bona fide guru. So this Yukta Vairagya means to accept only those things which can be used in Krishna's service and to reject everything else. It's a balanced process of detachment by which a devotee acquires the qualities of knowledge and detachment without undergoing the hard-hardening process of Jnana and Vairagya. On the path of bhakti, one still uses his emotions. They do not shrink or shrivel, but the emotions and activities engaged by Yukta Vairagya center exclusively on Krishna and therefore effectively extricate us from the mundane sphere. Thus, we can become attached to the Lord. Prabhupada gives the example of eating. Eating is necessary. We can't live without eating. So Prabhupada coined the phrase, one should eat to live, not live to eat. In other words, simple living and high thinking. So we want to eat some tasty dishes to satisfy our sense of taste. So in that case, for the satisfaction of Krishna rather than for our tongue, we should prepare wonderful dishes and offer them to Krishna. Then it is renunciation. So let palatable dishes be prepared, but unless they are offered to Krishna, one should not accept them for eating. This vow of rejecting anything which is not offered to Krishna is actually renunciation. And by such renunciation, one is able to satisfy the demands of the senses. Ordinarily, or yogi, or jnani, he would eat very boring foodstuffs, sattvic ahara, vegetarian foodstuffs. But he doesn't offer them because he doesn't live by the principle of bhakti. And he thinks that he should refrain from all tasty things, just eat a little rice and dal with no salt or spices in order to keep the senses quiet and purified without any stimulation or any taste. He eats practically tasteless, bland food. And this is his idea of renunciation and controlling the senses. Whereas the bhakti yogi, on the other hand, eats a variety of tasty foods which are offered to Krishna and accepts them in the mood of seva, in a mood of surrender, accepts Krishna prasad, in a mood of prasad seva, honoring Krishna's remnants with great devotion and great attention. And by doing this, although he's eating tasty palatable foodstuffs, he's actually purifying his senses and developing full renunciation. Then Rupa Goswami explains about the false renunciation of the impersonalist. Their vairagya is false and deceptive like the river Falgu. There's one river in India called the Falgu River, which apparently, so their apparent existence of detachment from sense objects, but it's only external because internally they remain attached to them. Just like this river Falgu, the river bed, if you come to this river, you see the river bed is actually dry. It appears like sand. But below the surface, if you push your hand through the sand, about a foot below the surface, the water is actually flowing. The water is still flowing there, although the surface appears to be dried up. So impersonalists appear to be very detached. But actually, because they're not using anything, but they still have a desire to use things and enjoy things. But Rupa Goswami explains that rejecting something which can be used in Krishna's service is falgu vairagya, false renunciation. So this actually hinders the path of bhakti. So the impersonalists, although their renunciation is artificial, because they don't have any contact with bhakti, they again fall down and become attracted to material contamination. So this is a secret of devotional service, that we should not give up anything which can be utilized in the service of the Lord. Now there's some discussion about wealth. A wealthy person may give a large donation to build a huge temple, but he should not think that the subsequent activities performed therein are his devotional service. In other words, the deity worship and offering prasadam is not his. If he becomes carried away by this misconception, his impetus for bhakti will diminish. Prabhupada writes about the spiritual master also. He should not be carried away by accumulating wealth and large number of disciples. Then there's just some discussion of yama, like yama niyama. Yama means restraint from passions. It includes activities such as ahimsa, nonviolence, brahmacharya, celibacy, satyam, truthfulness. These are not actually items of sadhana bhakti, because they do not impel devotion to manifest in heart. On the contrary, practice of bhakti impels these practices to manifest. The Prabhupada writes, A vegetarian is not necessarily a devotee, nor is a nonviolent person. But a devotee is automatically both vegetarian and nonviolent. We must conclude, therefore, that vegetarianism or nonviolence is not the cause of devotion. To affirm this point, Rupa Goswami cites the story of the hunter, Magrari, who became a great devotee. And then Rupa Goswami describes in this chapter 14 on page 117, he explains here that purification of consciousness, purification of bodily activities, austerity, peace of mind, they all become automatically manifest in the person who is engaged in bhakti. Then he talks about, for two paragraphs, he talks about ekanga bhakti and anekanga bhakti. So ekanga bhakti, this is bhakti practiced by concentrating on one of the items, ekanga, one limb, or anekanga means concentrating equally on all the items. So there's some description here on page 117. And there's examples of devotees who attain perfection in practicing one limb of bhakti, ekanga bhakti. King Pariksha achieved perfection by hearing, shravanam. Shukadeva Goswami achieved perfection, the goal of life, by chanting Srimad Bhagavatam, kirtanam. Prahlad Maharaj became successful in bhakti by always remembering the Lord, Vishnu Smaranam. Lakshmi was successful in engaging herself in massaging the lotus feet of the Lord, Padasevanam, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam. King Prithu became successful in worshipping in the temple. Vandanam. Akrura became successful by offering prayers to Krishna. Dasyam. Hanuman became successful by rendering personal service to Lord Ramchandra. Sakyam. Arjuna became successful by being Krishna's friend. And Atmanivedanam. Bali Maharaj became successful by offering all of his possessions to Krishna. And that's examples of ekanga bhakti and anekanga bhakti. This is an example of devotees who discharged all the different items together, and that's the classic example is Maharaj Ambarish, who followed every one of the devotional principles. Savai Mara Krishna Padara Vindayora Bacham Shivai Kunta Gunara Navarane. First, King Ambarish concentrated all his mind and mental faculties, thinking, feeling, willing, on the lotus feet of Krishna. Then he engaged his speech in describing Krishna's pastimes and qualities, and engaged his hands in cleaning the temple of Krishna. He engaged his ears in hearing the transcendental glories of Sri Krishna, and he engaged his eyes in seeing the beautiful form of Krishna in the temple deity. Ambarish engaged his body in associating with pure devotees of the Lord. In this way, he got to touch the devotees. It says here in a note, Ambarish made his association only with pure devotees, and he did not allow his body to be touched by anyone else. Ambarish engaged his nose in smelling flowers and tulsi offered to Krishna, engaged his tongue in tasting Krishna prasad, and he also offered the Lord wonderful preparations. In this way, he was completely Krishna conscious. So then he concludes this chapter in discussion of Vaidhi Bhakti by saying that the scriptural regulative principles of devotional service are sometimes described as the path of serving the Lord in opulence, Aishwarya Mayi Jnana Bhakti. Aishwarya Mayi Jnana Bhakti. This is Vallabhacharya. He explains that this is called Maryada Marg. Vishnu Chakravarti explains, if respect and regard for scriptural directions guides one on the way to bhakti, then such scriptures respecting bhakti are called Maryada Marg or Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Now it's discussion chapter 15. It's called Spontaneous Devotional Service, which in Sanskrit is Ragatmika Bhakti, which is describing the first of all the this is the second section of Sadhana Bhakti. There's Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, now Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. Chapters 15 and 16 will describe Raganuga Sadhana. So Raganuga Sadhana is a devotional practice that strives to cultivate the moods of Krishna's eternal associates in Vrindavan, like Sridham and Subal and Sakiras and Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and Vatsalya Ras and Sri Rupa Manjari and Lita Sakhi and Madhurya Ras. So before we describe Raganuga Sadhana, we must first describe the moods of devotional attachment found in Krishna's eternal associates in Vrindavan. So a Ragatmika Bhakta embodies the perfection of spontaneous love for Krishna, and a Raganuga Bhakta follows in the wake of that perfect devotee, earnestly endeavoring to achieve their perfect mood of spontaneous love. So the type of intense absorption that these Nityaparikaras have is only found in Vrindavan, on a lesser degree in Dwarka. So there are two types of Ragatmika Bhakti described by Rupa Goswami. One is called Kama Rupa, which is sensual attraction, and the other is Sambandha Rupa, relationship. So devotees experiencing Kamarup feel an intense desire to satisfy the Lord in conjugal love. Sambandha Rupa includes devotees who experience an intense desire to satisfy the Lord as his parent, friend, or intimate servant. So this includes Dasya Ras, Sakhi Ras, and Vatsalya Ras. That's Sambandha Rupa, Ragatmika Bhakti.